It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up on this Wednesday, April 20th. I'm not going to make any more references to that the rest of the episode, I promise.
Yeah, you get it everywhere else.
Yeah, and well, I'm also not going to get us in trouble. Caleb Johnson in with my co-host, Joe Patrick. Joe, what's going on? And what's been, I guess, an interesting week? You know, there's no storylines, are there?
Yeah, nothing's going on. I think we can just wrap this thing up, Caleb. We'll talk to you guys next week. No, just kidding, of course. By the way, speaking of that, this will most likely be our new normal recording time. We're obviously recording this one on Wednesday afternoon. We're going to try to bring these podcasts to you in the middle of the week. We know there's a lot of already existing podcasts that come out on Mondays, and we figured that, you know, it might be better to kind of catch people in the middle of the week, especially after, you know, an early week series wraps up, kind of like the situation we're in now with the Dodgers series kind of wrapping up, and we can kind of look back at some of that. So just a little notice out to our listeners about that, but it's actually been a pretty exciting week, I think, for the Braves, and kind of a sneaky good week. There's been kind of some bad vibes I've been noticing on Twitter and things like that, but you know, the Braves, if they've got Charlie Morton going up today against Tony Gonsolin, if they win that game, they end this West Coast road trip against two solid teams with a winning record and a winning series over the Dodgers. I mean, I think that's pretty good, so I think it's been a pretty exciting week for the Braves.
Yeah, it's one that I think people see the record currently sitting at 6-7. You're coming off the World Series and oh no, you know, the Mets are playing really good and full-time panic essentially, especially when you break down some of the individual things that we've seen, there's definitely some cause for concern. However, you're right is that we've made it through a series playing the Padres and the Dodgers, two teams that we fully expect to be at the top of the National League. And like you said, with a win, we come away with a winning record from the series. I think it's we are at the point of we need to be concerned about things, but not necessarily like sounding the alarm. And then there's also some things that early on we can be really excited for. I think the one that jumps off right off the bat to me, Joe, is Max Fried. After two starts of kind of going, what are we going to get? You get a guy who, if not for our head of digital at 92.9, Knox Bardeen, jinxing Max Fried.
That's right.
I'm totally putting this on Knox. I'm kidding. But so Max obviously, you know, was headed towards a perfect game. It gets broken up in the sixth inning. Still goes seven innings of without allowing a run, eight strikeouts, I think, was the big thing for me.
I mean, still, that's like so much fun to watch Max Fried when he's dealing like that. He's the one pitcher, I would say, on this staff, just because of his stuff, I guess, that is just like he's really fun to watch when he's dealing like that. When he has all of his pitches working, and especially, you know, he's feeling it when he starts dropping sliders and curveballs in for strike one against hitters. That's when you know that he's got these guys totally bamboozled. And obviously a lot of it rests on the fastball, just when he's able to locate it consistently for strikes and being able to, you know, have the velocity on it like he did last night, where he's able to blow it by guys to the point where they're sitting red and he's dropping in the curveball for strike one. I mean, that's just beautiful to see from Max Fried. And it's good to see, because I don't know if we've seen him be that sharp, even though he's pitched well in these first couple games and been hard done by on the top of his line. You know, just to see him in the form he was in last night was really encouraging. Hopefully it's a confidence builder for him as he kind of is, you know, building up, gearing up for the season ahead. And hopefully he can maintain some modicum of that throughout, you know, his next handful of starts. I will point out he is particularly good in his career when he has the extra day rest. So I think the Braves going with this six-man rotation is really helping him. And I think that maybe what we saw last night is partly evident because of the Braves giving him a proper amount of rest. Obviously, he won't be getting it throughout the entire season, but in this early portion of the season, for him to be getting the right amount of rest or a solid amount of rest to be able to perform like that is huge. So it was just really fun. I mean, I was just like enjoying it so much. I was not so concerned about the perfect game as much as I was just enjoying watching him pitch.
Yeah, well, I think it was dominant. Like, he looked dominant out there. Something that his catcher Travis d'Arnaud said after the game was the fact that he had all five of his pitches working for him. And it at least seemed, from the way that Travis was talking, and I mean, just from seeing his stat lines, the way that these games have gone for him, that hasn't been the case for him this season, is that everything was working. Travis also said something really interesting at the fact that maybe Max Fried used the Dodgers as a team as kind of, there was a little something extra there. Like, he was playing some of the best in all of baseball, and specifically in the National League. And so he felt he had to bring his best. That concerns me in a way that is kind of like there's another team in the city that struggles with playing down to competition and playing up to better competition in the Atlanta Hawks. It's one that gets a lot of talk. So I don't like hearing... a guy, and Travis was trying to use it, I think, in a positive light, as in, like, yeah, you know, it's the Dodgers, you know, we're here in LA, Max really knew he had to bring it, and I'm kind of going, no, I want him to do that every start. And I also get concerned, Joe, at what you were talking about, which is the fact of he is looking better on an extra day of rest. And that's not what he's going to get all season. And it actually, like, we're reaching a point right now based on some moves that have been made where I don't know if that extends beyond currently. But he's also yeah. You know, in the World Series, thrown on 3 days rest and won a World Series in Game 6. You know, right. So it's like, okay. I'm just like, I'm not willing to hit the panic button on him. There is just things that concern me, and I'm trying to figure out mainly if last night is an outlier or if it's the thing that we can go to expect.
That's what I was going to say. With all these guys, whether it's they're playing really well, like Max Fried, the way he pitched last night, Marcelo Zuna, the way he's been hitting the ball, you know, or whatever, or players who are performing poorly, that's what we have to watch out for, is the fact that these are still just tiny fragments of the season. And if Max Fried, well, maybe a pitcher isn't the best kind of example of this, but if somebody goes on a hot stretch for 11 games in June, it's fodder for our podcast and things, but people aren't extrapolating that out as being like, oh, well, like, this is what he's going to be from here on out, that kind of thing. You know, it's just players go through hot streaks, cold streaks, and I think we have to kind of keep that in mind at this point in the season, that sometimes we're just seeing, you know, somebody go through something that, you know, they might lose it at some point, but we just have to kind of, I think, be measured in our... what we're extrapolating from some of these performances. So I'm with you. It's like, you know, it's great to see from Fried, but... you know, there's a lot of the season left. That's why I'm just kind of at the point of, I'm just thinking, I just enjoy watching that, you know, because it's just fun to watch him deal.
And I think the big thing for me about last night's performance was I wasn't surprised. like nothing about that was like, whoa, I didn't know he had this in him.
Right.
Like, no, I absolutely knew. I know he does. It just hadn't shown itself until this point. And so... you're right. Maybe we should do more of just enjoying the moment sort of thing and wonder, like, hey, maybe he can do this, or maybe he comes a little bit more down to earth in his next few starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, something, this isn't really pertinent to Max Fried specifically, but something you were kind of touching on earlier in terms of the magnitude of the games. You know, I think it was something that Kelly Krull from the Bally broadcast was talking about with Kenley Jansen after the game, talking about how it felt like a playoff game. You know, maybe it's probably not a playoff game exactly, yeah. but it was a higher intensity, I'm sure. And I think it's good for the Braves to play these kinds of games now, where, you know, I was at all those home games for the opening homestand, and with all the celebrations about the World Series and everything, and people coming to get the rings and see the ceremonies there, it was getting to be a lot. And we talked about it. I'm sure our listeners have heard, you know, the sound bites of Braves players and Brian Snicker talking about that kind of thing. And I think that this series in particular against the Dodgers is a really nice one, in terms of it just allows these guys to put their nose to the grindstone and just play baseball, you know, play baseball at a high level, and they're not thinking about anything else really. And so I hope that this series in general can get the team into like a kind of a flow state almost, in terms of the rhythm they go about their season. And I hope that Max Fried is kind of an example of them getting into that kind of form.
Well, part of why I mentioned earlier that I don't know how often Max Fried is going to get that sixth day of rest is because the Braves are trying to figure out what they're doing with the rotation. They had to make a tough decision this week that maybe wasn't so tough. Well, I think one was easier to make than the other. Waskari Noah, after his poor start in the first Dodger game, which I was really scratching my head at, but Waskari Noah is sent down to Gwinnett, and then Sean Newcomb is designated for assignment because, well, we got the same old Sean Newcomb that we've been getting for a while. A guy who, you know, I saw someone tweet out the other day, like, maybe it wasn't a good idea to put a guy on the opening day roster just because he didn't have options. You know, like that's never a real good recipe for success. And so
I would say, though, it's like he was on the opening day roster because he didn't have options, but I don't think they kept him up any longer than they would have. I mean, they basically treated him like he did have options. And as soon as he wasn't helping the team, that was the end of the line for Nuke. And I honestly could kind of see it coming after Brian Snicker was just livid with not so much the double that he gave up to Trey Turner in that game that cleared the bases but it was the four pitch walk to Freddie Freeman, the batter before, when he came into the game to load the bases. That is what drives Brian Snicker up a freaking wall, and frankly the rest of us.
Yeah.
Watching Sean Newcomb. And I was just looking at some of his stats yesterday. He has 213 walks in 383 innings in his Braves career. That is abysmal. That is not major league caliber. And until he figures that out, he will not be helping any team in the major leagues. And we'll see if somebody picks him up. Obviously, every team now has an opportunity to do so. I think we were texting a little bit about that, and we disagreed a little bit. But, I mean, I think that he very well could not get picked up. I mean, why would you when you see these numbers? But I just happen to think that some team will be smitten by his, you know, his measurables. He's 6'5", yeah, lefty, first round pick. You know, we'll be the change of scenery for him. So, but clearly he wasn't getting it done with the Braves.
Well, that was, yeah. I think just, I don't know, maybe it was frustration for me that I sent you that text of like, I even tweeted out like, he could very well end up back in Gwinnett because no one picks him up. Somebody's going to pick him up. I get it. Because of that very thing, you know, the measurables that you just listed and the fact that he was a first round pick, it's kind of like a first round quarterback where, you know, he'll end up landing with another team just because someone's like, I can fix him. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I put his name in Twitter the day that he was designated, and I saw Angels beat writers who were like, hey, you know, this guy, Sean Newcomb, that we traded back in 2014, he's available now. 6'5", you know, he was our first round pick, and I was like, oh man, people are really doing it, like they're tricking themselves, and it's fine, you know, it
talking themselves into it.
I get it. However, I don't think it's gonna work out.
He's gonna be 29 in June. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
To me, for some reason, I guess maybe because of his poor performance, he still seems, young, but like, man, he's not young. No. Like, he needs to figure it out for his own career. I certainly hope I hope that he kills it. And he very well may. Tyler Matzik was kind of in that situation. He couldn't find the strike zone, had the yips, almost fell out of baseball altogether. He was a former first-round pick with all the measurables and all that. Braves sign him. Everything turns around for him. So maybe something like that can happen for Sean Newcomb. I hope it does. But clearly, it wasn't going anywhere here, and I think it was the proper move. I think a lot of fans are probably honestly relieved to see this happen, knowing they won't be put through this experience again of seeing the Braves just try to get him going.
Yeah. The thing that wasn't the proper move was, at least in my opinion, the game that he entered, the situation that he entered, the fact that it was a one-run game, very winnable game that feels like it really got out of hand at that point. And then Waskari Noah, a guy who, I mean, this was the hot shot, the guy that was in the bullpen, became a starter, and was just like, you can't turn away from what this guy's got. He breaks his hand last year, and I mean, has it turned around for him yet? Like, has he had a good start, a quality start since he broke his hand? I don't know.
I'd have to look at his pitching log. I don't know. I don't know if he has, honestly, but
it's not been good this year.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, through two starts, it was not good. I'll put my cards on the table here and say I'm still quite high on Waskari Noah. I know he's been through his struggles, obviously, especially since coming back from this hand injury, or maybe kind of not coming back from it yet.
Yeah.
To me, though, there's something to be encouraged about with his stuff. When you see him out there, he's throwing 98 miles an hour, and the slider looks sharp. He's also trying to mix in a changeup now, trying to develop a changeup to really make him even more sustainable starting pitcher to integrate that changeup in. But the release point is just all over the place, it looks like, and there's just way too many uncompetitive pitches. And that's when you compare a start like Enoa's to a start like Max Fried's, there's lots of differences. But the big one to me, the kind of overarching one, is that when Max Fried's like that, he's not wasting a single pitch. Like, even balls are swingable or setting up a batter or something. There's like maybe three like just spiked balls that are just non-competitive, as opposed to guys like Sean Newcomb and what we've seen from Waskari Noah in more recently, where it's just way too many uncompetitive pitches to the point where batters can start to get ahead in counts and then sit on fastballs because they know it's the only thing he can throw for a strike. And then that's where I think he starts to get into a little bit of trouble. But I'm actually encouraged by the fact that he was optioned to Gwinnett, because I think that he needs to work on that delivery. He needs to find that consistent release point. And that's a perfect and Gwinnett's a perfect place to do that. I think that if and when he can find that consistency with the mechanics and the release point, I very well think he could be back to a similar type of pitcher that he was when he was on track to be an all-star before he suffered that injury. I just think that, because the stuff is there, I just think that he definitely, you know, needs to work on some things. And I would also just say that people should remember that he is one of the younger pitchers among these young pitchers on the Braves, you know, in contention for the rotation. He's younger than Tukey, younger than Kyle Wright, younger than Tucker Davidson. I think he's younger than Kyle Muller. I mean, he's 23 years old. So be patient with the guy. I know that there's been a lot of expectations on him because of that great start that he had last year, but I think this is fine. This is a total kind of normal part of the development process for Waskari Noah, and hopefully he goes down there, works on some things, and improves and is able to come back, because he is going to get more opportunities to be a big part of this rotation later on this season.
I think my issue with what happened with Waskari Noah this season, at least to this point, is that assumptions were just made about him, or you know, in the fact that he was a starter last year. Okay. When he came into spring this year, I don't want it to be assumed that he was just a starter.
Mm-hmm. He was kind of being anointed, right?
Yeah. It was almost like it wasn't even being questioned. And my thought was, well, based on how the end of last year went for him, nothing should be assumed with him. And to the fact that he is so young. I want him coming back. The next time I see Waskari Noah in up with a big league club, I want him as a reliever. I don't want him as a starter. I'm actually kind of, I guess I'm surprised that he was optioned down to Gwinnett, only because it seems to show me that they expect that that's a move for him to go work on starting with Gwinnett, with just lesser competition and figuring himself out. And I'm kind of like, no, we've seen enough this year from Waskari Noah and Spencer Strider that those guys should swap. Like, that there shouldn't be. And I know what's about to happen because of the moves that they made. They brought up Touki Toussaint and they brought up Dylan Lee. Touki Toussaint's about to start in Waskari Noah's spot. Mm-hmm. That annoys me because I don't think it's the right move. And this is nothing against Touki. I think Tukey's kind of a guy that maybe hasn't quite figured it out yet. I don't know what he's been doing in Gwinnett. And I know what my own two eyes have seen from Spencer Strider. I know he's stretched out, and I'm kind of like, it's almost like we're working based on like seniority. And why are we doing that? I don't understand that. I don't want to see that. And that's been my frustration with what I saw at Waskari Noah. I thought after his first start, there should have been some major red flags and questions raised about him. And then the fact that I understand the thought process, but then I also don't understand it, where Brian Snicker wanted to give Waskari Noah an extra day of rest, so he swapped the starts. Mm-hmm. But he also
moved Elder up.
Yeah. But because you and I, I got on here last week talking about, I don't know that I really want Bryce Elder going up, making his second start against the Dodgers. That's a lot of pressure. Seeing Freddie Freeman for the first time. However, based on what Bryce Elder did, I'd have much rather seen him go up against the Dodgers for the first time that the Braves are seeing him with Freddie Freeman. Like, those sorts of things you have to take into account. And so the fact that it was just like, well, Waskari needs an extra day of rest. Doesn't matter that that happens to line up with the first game of the Dodgers. Doesn't matter that that happens the first time you're going to see Freddie Freeman. Then, of course, and we get our Hollywood story.
The interesting thing about this one, Caleb, is that I don't think that they wanted they did the swap to necessarily give, the rest. It was more they wanted to give him the extra day to work on this delivery issue that he's been having that's affecting his release point. And I think that that's the reason why he's been optioned, because this is just kind of me taking, extrapolating ideas from what has been said by Brian Snicker, but I think they want him to go down there and work, and that's why they don't transition him to the bullpen, is because they don't even feel confident in him right now to bring him out of the bullpen. And, with confidence that he's not going to come out and like walk a couple guys and get himself into a jam. I think they want him to just go down and work on some of those fundamentals. So that's why I think, that's the reason why they swapped him to give him that extra day to work on some things. And I think that that's why it's the proper move to option him, so he doesn't have the pressure of trying to perform at this level.
Well, but you talk about pressure to perform, the extra day to work on something then lined up with playing the Dodgers. Like, that was, I think that was my issue is that was just like, if you were going to, I don't know. I know that they wanted to see him one more time before they made a decision to send him down to Gwinnett. It just felt like you went from, oh, he needs to work on a couple of things, go face the Dodgers. Like, go face Freddie Freeman for the first time.
Now go do it against a guy with an all-star batting ninth.
Yeah.
And Will Smith.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like that's it kind of takes me into the next thought that I had about some of the things going on earlier in this season, which is, I'm curious what you think, Joe, of when can we question Brian Snicker? I am one who believes right out of the gate. I get it. The guy was the manager who led this team to a World Series a year ago. That's great. Woohoo. If this was Alabama football or Georgia football and Kirby Smart or Nick Saban started off the season losing their first game or losing their first two games, those fans would be going berserk on some, we have got to fix this, you know, something's got to change immediately. And yet I see a lot of, specifically on Twitter, people coming to the defense of Brian Snicker, saying it's earlier in the season, you can't be so worried about this stuff. And then other people who are essentially like, oh, the Braves are going to miss the playoffs. You know, I mean, they've completely screwed themselves because of the decisions of Brian Snicker. I don't know, where do you lie in and how to question, or do we question Brian Snicker's managerial decisions early in the year?
I mean, I think there's certainly always reason to question a manager's decisions. And I certainly disagree with some of the things that have been happening in terms of just like, yeah, managerial decisions, tactical, strategic decisions that have been made. But at the same time, I try to kind of couch that in the understanding that it is a long season. And, you know, it's a big difference between getting off to the start that the Braves have so far and like losing your first two games of a football season, where that's like a larger, much larger percentage of the totality of this, of the season. And, you know, just with Brian Snicker in general, it's never been his strong suit in terms of, well, even that sounds like I'm being overly yeah. critical about him, but Brian Snicker's forgotten more about baseball than I'll ever know. So I don't want to sound like a smartass here, but I mean, I think that there's obvious things that we can question. One of them is Orlando Arcia has been DHing instead of playing left field, which we now know he can play in left field because he's been playing there against the Dodgers. I don't think he just learned how to do it. Nope. I think he's probably been able to play left field all year long, but instead he had been DHing for a while Marcelo Zuna out there, the poor guy, can hardly throw a baseball. He looks like my dad throwing the ball, who's had like a million surgeries and can hardly move his right arm. Like, he has to like torque his whole body and like kind of fling his arm around. It like looks painful yeah. and awkward, and it's obviously contributing to this terrible Braves outfield defense that we've seen so far this season.
Yeah, the Marcelo Zuna thing was always interesting, because when we all first saw it, first off, Orlando Arcia being a designated hitter, I mean, he was hitting ninth. You never want your DH hitting ninth. if you don't have any more faith than him, then he shouldn't be your designated hitter.
Yeah.
And so, thankfully, I mean, Marcel was still, he was terrible out in the field, and you're right, a liability. I think we forgot that. I think him not playing last season, and then in the 2020 shortened season, only having to do it a handful of times, that we were all kind of like, it's fine, we'll manage. Well, we got to get through a month.
It's not that bad.
Yeah. Because the whole idea is, oh, well, you know, Acuna gets back and they'll reshuffle this thing around.
I may have literally said that, what you just said, a month ago.
Well, it's because I think we forgot. And then
I definitely forgot.
I was going to say, specifically opening day was for me when I was just
that
like,
that was the reminder.
Oh, that was not, that was not good.
Oh, everyone goes, oh no.
But then I think,
what have we done?
Yeah, but that goes into questioning Brian Snicker, because then they kept trotting him out there. And then we've seen in this Dodger series, Orlando Arcia playing out in the field, it's not perfect. It's still an upgrade from Marcelo Zuna, and Marcelo Zuna's continuing to rake. So leave it there, you know, don't overthink these sorts of things. Especially because you might have to start overthinking, or not really overthinking, you might have to start thinking strongly about what you're going to do with your other outfielders, as Alex Dickerson and as Eddie Rosario continue to struggle would be putting it lightly.
Thank goodness at least Eddie's starting to hit the ball a little bit harder these last couple games. But man, it's been bad. Part of me, like Alex Dickerson, he was legitimately hard done by early in the season, but that's since trailed off a little bit. He was hitting the ball hard. At one point, he was leading the team in average exit velocity, like through about a week, I think. I think through the opening homestand. Now Marcelo Zuna's blowing him out of the water. Yeah. I think Marcelo Zuna might be leading the league in average exit velocity, or if not, he's close to it. But yeah, it's been like really rough seeing those guys. And something that I heard somebody mention earlier today actually was, you know, it can't be easy for them also this early in the season to like see those numbers reflected on the scoreboard and stuff. Like every time they come up and it's like, you're hitting zero something, you know, it's not like they're hitting a tough stretch in the middle of the season where they've already accumulated a bunch of stats where they didn't have to stare at exactly how bad they've been. And I do wonder if that may like just compound some of the difficulty. But yeah, I mean, it's not been good. Caleb, there, speaking of Brian Snicker's managerial missteps, I guess we could say, yeah. You mentioned it earlier, bringing Newcomb into that game with one run, or I'm sorry, with you know, obviously in a jam with two on facing Freddie Freeman in a tight game, a game that you still at that point had a, you know, you were obviously very well in. In what was it, the fourth inning that he came in? I think more so, we don't need to talk necessarily about, well, maybe we could, about Newcomb coming into the situation in general, but I think it's more about Brian Snicker's overall philosophy on bullpen management and the fact that he does not seem willing to bring in, you know, his top guns in a situation that is extremely crucial, like this one was. Solely because it happens at a certain point in the game, at which point Brian Snicker does not want to bring in certain relievers.
Yeah, I think it was funny. I don't know if you, well, you probably would have heard the exchange with Dave O'Brien when,
when
you know, Snitch talking.
It's a little tense.
Yeah, but it was like, I was like, thank you, Dave. Yeah. You know, thank you, Dave, yeah, for holding in there. And even getting a little sassy.
Like, who am I supposed to bring in? And Dave's like, Minter.
Yeah. Well, he was. I think the quote was like, I can think of a handful of guys.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
started naming a couple. And then Snit hits him back with, you know, well, if I just use all these guys, they'll be cooked essentially come around playoff time. And it's just one of those like, but use them there. Use them there. Now, two nights from now, when it's their, like, scheduled time, and you're winning by four, don't use them then. You know, then go to a guy who, if you give up a run, you still got some wiggle room. Like, you know, it's just, just use your... How am I seeing this as a fan? Like, what am I missing here as a media member or as a fan that you are seeing differently? Because what I feel like I'm seeing from Brian Snicker is, you know, save them at all costs and keep them on a schedule that they are as healthy as they can be by the postseason. However, as we all know, if you don't win enough games during the regular season, your postseason becomes a lot more difficult. And I think that's what's frustrating about the crew. The group of people on social media who are like, hey, you know, don't question Brian Snicker. Like, we're still earlier in the season. Those same people come August are going to be like, well, you know, if we only had a couple more games go our way, then maybe we wouldn't be in the position that we're in or whatever be the case. You know, it's just like you have to know that these games matter. Otherwise, you wouldn't be playing them. If you tell me that these games in April don't matter, then we shouldn't be playing 162 games. That's a separate conversation.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just that's kind of where I get to this point. And it's strange with how Snicker does that. And I'm glad when I see guys like Dave O'Brien push back on some like, all right, well, at least help me understand. And it seems like Brian Snicker's reasoning is, I want these guys to stay healthy and rested.
Yeah. Caleb, we got some breaking news happening right now.
Uh-oh.
The Braves today placed infielder Austin Riley on the paternity list.
Ooh.
So congratulations to Mr. Riley. I wanted to try to see if I could scare you a little bit.
You did.
when they placed Austin Riley on the maternity list.
Well.
So yeah, Travis Demerit will be coming up from AAA. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Okay. I was just about to say, and this is one of those, this is also one of those fun conversations that I see pop up is like that professional athletes should schedule their yeah. kids in the off season. How dare yeah, yeah. you? How dare you schedule your children to be born when I want to see my team win?
Come on, think about the team.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more reasonable for baseball players because they play 162. That it's kind of like, I mean, honestly. When I mean,
Riley thought we'd still be locked out at yeah. that point, so you know who can blame him? Who
yeah,
blame
but congrats for Austin Riley.
Sorry, I kind of derailed us a little bit there. I did want to just kind of bring it back real quick. I wanted to kind of defend Snicker's position a little bit here, not necessarily because I personally defend it, although I do understand his perspective. But I just want to kind of put it out there for listeners to understand where he's coming from, which is that the way he sees it. First of all, you just don't know what's going to happen in the future. So one of the big problems that people had with that particular situation was that the whole bullpen was basically available to pitch in that game. Mm-hmm. There was no arms that were off the table at that point. So you have your whole allocation of bullpen arms, and we know the Braves have some good ones. But what Snicker, from his point of view, he's got two games left, and I think, honestly, then having the off day makes us even a little bit more indefensible, but I'm going to continue to try. I'm going to try and defend him for the sake of an interesting conversation anyway. You know, he just did it. The way he sees it is that he wants his top guns to be available to lock down wins. And the reason that you have pitchers like Sean Newcomb and other pitchers are to come into some of these situations, especially early in games, because he wants those top guys to have a certain rhythm and a certain timing of, you know, they know when they're going to be getting used in games, and it all fits kind of into their daily routine. And I think that that's where he's coming from, talking about the burnout of, oh, well, if I use these guys in the fourth inning randomly and they don't know it's coming every so often, you know, they'll be out of form, out of rhythm later on in the season, maybe even burned out, to the point that he was making. So I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I mean, I still think that you need to bring in arms in crucial situations. That, you know, that was a very much a game deciding situation, maybe not game deciding, but extremely influential moment of the game that really did end up swinging the tide. And it's just a shame that you didn't have somebody out there better than Newcomb. But, you know, you do need other pitchers to perform. Ideally, Newcomb was in a good spot lefty on lefty against Freddie Freeman, but you have other lefties you could have thrown at him. You could have thrown Minter or Matzik, or, you know, pick your lefty. I mean, the Braves have a bunch of good ones in their bullpen. So I understand where Brian Snicker's coming from, but I also agree with you overall as to that particular situation. I just felt like especially Newcomb, with the struggles that we've already talked about him having, just never felt good. And it kind of had the ending that I think we all, unfortunately, were expecting.
Well, if I'm completely honest, it was the one time that I actually felt bad for Sean Newcomb, because I thought he was set up for failure versus some other situations he could have been put in. Now, it's still indefensible in a way that, like, Sean Newcomb comes in that game and he just looked scared. You talk about pitching around Freddie Freeman to walk him. Like, he looked like he didn't want to be the one who gives up the home run. And it's like, I'm sorry, unfortunately, you're in a situation, you've got to fake it till you make it. And he hadn't been able to fake it. And, you know, it's end of the road. And as we said earlier, you know, I mean, I hope he is able to find it in the rest of his career. However, I think we're in a position now, Joe, kind of touching back on some outfielders we were talking earlier. How long do you keep bringing Alex Dickerson along? I you know, it was kind of a guy that you took a flyer on the off season. I'm one that, I don't know if you saw on the show sheet, Joe, I put a name in there that's been real popular that, I'm going to make a hot, I think it's a hot take. I don't know that it's really that hot of a take. I think this year, the blockbuster move that Alex Anthopoulos makes is not trading for someone, but bringing up someone within the farm system, Michael Harris. I think he's a guy who in Mississippi has been tearing the cover off the ball. I think he's batting like 336, if I remember that correctly. I put in there, yeah, 366. He's batting so far early in the season, 9 RBIs. a 932 OPS. Like, he is performing really well. And I just wonder, I think we forget how little Eddie Rosario actually played for the Braves last year. like, Eddie was the heroic guy who stepped up in some big moments. But I don't even know how many games Eddie Rosario even started.
Well, do you remember? Yeah, do you remember when they traded for him? He didn't even play for a while.
No,
like he was.
He only played 33 games.
He was playing in Gwinnett for a while.
Yeah, I think he only played 33 games for the Braves last year, and I don't know how many of those he actually started. It was more of like he was coming in as a pinch hitter or late inning defensive replacement sort of thing, which is funny to say now. You know, after after missing, I heard you on Dukes and Bell the other day talk about like that was one of the worst errors you've ever seen, just for the fact that you're right.
It was terrible.
He camped under it and he dropped it. Like
and that happened to me when I was a kid, and I like hit off the tip of my glove and then hit me in the eye. You know,
yeah.
Thankfully for him, it didn't hit him in the face, but like my God, like that was just brutally bad.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, I know we're all waiting around for Ronald Acuna to come back, and especially when Acuna performs like he did last night in his first time out, you know, professionally this year, we all get really excited, but I think there's still going to be an issue there, even when Acuna comes back, that makes me go, okay, I know what the Braves are doing with Michael Harris and having him play down in Mississippi. Like, he's a guy that they want to have team control on for years to come. And so saving that if they don't have to use it. However, it feels like it's about that time that they're going to have to break the emergency glass and pull the lever.
Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier in the show, you never want to make too much out of a small sample size and all that. All those disclaimers aside, this Eddie Rosario situation does not look good. And, you know, he was signed on a 2-year, $18 million contract. And right now, I got to be honest with you, Caleb, this $9 million a year he's on feels a lot like the $9 million that Ender Inciarte was on, like toward the end of his stint. You know, it felt like that kind of contract where, man, like you sign him for a certain amount with the expectation that he would be giving you a certain amount of production on the field, and it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. I don't know, you know, again, maybe he will turn around, but you do look at the minimal amount he's played for the Braves, which I hadn't really honestly considered until you just brought it up here, Caleb, but he only had 96 at bats last year for the Braves, so it's kind of crazy. So with that said, you know, Caleb, you mentioned him, Michael Harris, the stats he's been putting up. It should also be said that he's doing this in Mississippi, which is, by all accounts, like the hardest place to hit a baseball in the world.
Yeah, true.
It's like, or at least in this country, it's like the hardest place to hit. I don't know how many they haven't played all their games down in Mississippi, but it's impressive and it's undeniable what Michael Harris is doing. And I agree with you. I think that it's the easiest option for them to find a solution to some of these problems they've been having when you look at the outfield defense, the hitting at the bottom of the order, all those kinds of things. So I agree with you. And I don't think they should be shy to call him up either, because by all accounts, he's a guy who is going to be a major league player at some point sooner rather than later. And so even if you do come in, you know, you bring him up, but you send him down a little bit later, maybe for some reason, we know Acuna's coming back to the team, which we're going to talk about in a second. You know, that's fine. Like, you can start his clock. You're not going to run through his options. You know, I don't think, like, you can use this year as an option year for him. Maybe next year as an option year for him. But like, in general, he will be a long-term mainstay, it sounds like, with the Braves. So, I'm with you. I would love to see him called up again. He hasn't even been to AAA. You know, I don't know if the Braves have question marks on that front, but I certainly wouldn't have question marks. Just when I see him play the highlights, he looks like the exact kind of player that the Braves could really use out there in their outfield right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, maybe I'm pushing for it too soon, but
we're kind of reacting to this as just like kind of fans, essentially.
Yeah, I just need something to change. Obviously, the big change, what we've been alluding to, is Ronald Acuna is going to come back sooner rather than later. It sure seems like that. What is it? May 6th date?
May 6th.
Is what they're circling. No, it's not going to be any earlier than that, I don't think, you know, even with the fact of, you know, I mean, Acuna looked great last night. And then, of course, he does my favorite thing ever for a player who's experienced an injury. I think I'm stronger than I was before. You know, I'm coming.
Best shape of his life.
Best shape of his career. Best shape of his life. Absolutely. It's funny because it's one of those. Maybe, Ronald, you're just working out the most that you ever have, you know?
Yeah.
I mean that's like the thing about Ronald that
he's got a lot of testosterone pumping through the system right now. He's been doing a lot of upper body.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's
a lot of chest and arms.
Exactly. You know, like I love him to death. I don't think he's necessarily the most mature individual, and I know that always makes me sound like such I'm anti Ronald Acuna or anything.
Okay,
like,
boomer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. You know, I feel so bad like being like that, but it just seeing what he did yesterday and what I'm sure he's going to continue to do with Gwinnett is no reason to be like, okay, next week. I mean, bring him up next week. You don't know.
Literally what I was asked this morning.
Yeah. Well,
if he could come back next week,
I'm not surprised. Yeah. And because it's one of those like, well, you're only talking about holding him out 1 week longer than that. And it's like, yes, but how about let's follow a deadline? Let's follow a game plan. I'm not like, this is so far different from like a Mike Soroka situation or anything like that. So there's no need to make those comparisons. But it's just like you have a date, stick with it. And let him build up his body and his endurance as he plays lesser competition.
Let's remember that these are literally his first swings of the season. Like this is his first game action of the season. This is his spring training.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they kind of planned it for 3 weeks, because that's like a solid spring training for a lot of hitters.
You
know, so I think that is reason alone why you would want to keep him down there just to get him in a good rhythm. Injury aside, I mean, just to reflect on that, I mean, he looked good. Like, the knee looked good. Physically, he does look solid. And he had a nice ringing double that was nearly a homer last night in his first game,
yeah.
Which would have been incredible for him if he would have hit a home run. I can't imagine what the reaction would have been. But still, extremely encouraging signs from him. I think that's the biggest point to make about Ronald at this point, is that physically, he looks good. Mentally, he sounds good. I think he's extremely happy. I saw there was like pictures. He was hanging around for a long time after the game,
yeah,
signing autographs for fans and stuff
awesome.
Last night, which is always great to see. I do want to mention something about, you know, like people talk about his immaturity or whatever. That's like, it's, while there's obviously a negative side to that, it's also one of the reasons we love him.
I know.
It's like, and it's one, it's kind of part of what makes him as a player, you know, he plays so freely and with a real kind of character that no other major leaguer has. It's like unique to him, the way he plays the game, which is so fun. But yeah, I mean, it's good. About whether he might come back early, I think it's possible he could come back before May 6th if he's playing really well, if he looks great. Maybe they do something with him around the time where rosters get trimmed on May 2nd. That's why I was kind of curious. I guess because of the way the schedule aligns is why they said the 6th. But I could see him coming back on the 2nd if maybe it makes some roster adjustments easier or beneficial to the team in one way or another. But beyond that, I would not expect anything. Let him be. Leave him be. Be extremely grateful to the Lord above that he's able to come back on May 6th after having had surgery in late July last year.
And so May 6th also lines up with a homestand that the Braves would then start. I think that's important, too. People may say, well, it doesn't matter. Get him back as soon as he can. I think there is something important to making his first game back be at home in front of the fans. There was something that was a little mishap, I will say, on opening day, where I think he should have been at the stadium to get his recognition for what he did for that World Series team last year, even though he wasn't on the field. You know, he was obviously injured.
It was a total mistake. He was at the stadium that day. He was just told he could go home, so that's what he did. He didn't even realize that they were going to be doing that thing.
Yeah, and you have to imagine, like, the staffer that told him that, you know, probably not in really the position to give those orders.
Wasn't thinking about pregame ceremonies. Yeah, there was probably, I think it was probably a trainer that was like, all right, you're done, you're good to go, you know, and so...
But it's also one of those, so, like, he hasn't been able to be at home at Truist Park to get the love and recognition that he deserves. Yeah. And so I would just, it makes sense that you want to wait until you get a homestand before, you know, having that moment for him, which is why you're going to, you know, wait until all the way until that Friday.
Caleb, I'm really curious because this is only the tip of the iceberg in terms of, oh, well, he should be coming back now. You know, think about, like, let's say in a week, let's say the Braves have kind of a down week.
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't. But let's say maybe they win some games, but, like, Rosario is still not hitting, or they, you know, there's some catastrophes defensively out there. And Acuna has hit like two homers in his last two games and is like just looking amazing. Like, I feel like this is only the beginning of what is going to just, like, continue to snowball this in terms of just the dialogue in the Twitter sphere around the team, you know, wanting him back. So brace yourself for those urges. And I have the urges as well. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not here to, like, scold anybody for like feeling like they want Ronald Acuna in the team. Like, I do too. Yeah. And it's going to be hard to wait these 3 weeks, but at least we get to watch him play baseball somewhere.
Absolutely. I think the exciting thing now is that, you know, we have a homestand coming up with some very winnable games. Specifically the Marlins and the Cubs coming up. It feels like this is a good time to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, start winning series. Go on that. What the Braves almost consistently always do is they go on a run of just, like, winning series after series after series. So this is a great opportunity for that.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to get to, Joe, before we get out of here?
We can get out of here.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to Batter Up. For my co-host, Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a good one. The big change, what we've been alluding to, is Ronald Acuna is going to come back sooner rather than later. It sure seems like that, what is it, May 6th date?
May 6th,
is what they're circling. No, it's not going to be any earlier than that, I don't think, you know, even with the fact of, you know, I mean, Acuna looked great last night, and then of course, he does my favorite thing ever. For a player who's experienced an injury, I think I'm stronger than I was before. You know, I'm coming.
Best shape of his life.
Best shape of his career. Best shape of his life. Absolutely. It's funny because it's one of those, maybe, Ronald, you're just working out the most that you ever have. You know, I mean, that's like the thing about Ronald that
he's got a lot of testosterone pumping through the system right now. He's been doing a lot of upper body.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's
a lot of chest and arms.
Exactly. You know, like I love him to death. I don't think he's necessarily the most mature individual, and I know that always makes me sound like such a I'm anti Ronald Acuna or anything.
Okay,
like,
boomer. Yeah, exactly. Okay, boomer.
Yeah. You know, I feel so bad like being like that, but it just seeing what he did yesterday and what I'm sure he's going to continue to do with Gwinnett is no reason to be like, oh, okay, next week? I mean, bring him up next week, you know? Just no.
Literally what I was asked this morning.
Yeah. Well,
if he could come back next week.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. And because it's one of those, like, well, you're only talking about holding him out 1 week longer than that. And it's like, yes, but how about let's follow a deadline? Let's follow a game plan. I'm not, like, this is so far different from, like, a Mike Soroka situation or anything like that, so there's no need to make those comparisons, but it's just like you have a date, stick with it and let him build up his body and his endurance as he plays lesser competition.
Let's remember that these are literally his first swings of the season. This is his first game action of the season. This is his spring training.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they kind of planned it for 3 weeks, because that's like a solid spring training for a lot of hitters, you know? So I think that is reason alone why you would want to keep him down there, just to get him in a good rhythm. Injury aside, I mean, just to reflect on that, I mean, he looked good. Like, the knee looked good. Physically, he does look solid, and he had a nice ringing double that was nearly a homer last night in his first game, yeah. Which would have been incredible for him to, if he would have hit a home run. I can't imagine what the reaction would have been. But still, extremely encouraging signs from him. I think that that's the biggest point to make about Ronald at this point, is that physically he looks good, mentally he sounds good. I think he's extremely happy. I saw there was like pictures he was hanging around for a long time after the game, yeah, signing autographs for fans and stuff last night, which is always great to see. I do want to mention something about, you know, like people talk about his immaturity or whatever. That's like, it's, while there's obviously a negative side to that, it's also one of the reasons we love him.
I know.
It's like, and it's one, it's kind of part of what makes him as a player, you know, he plays so freely and with a real kind of character that no other major leaguer has. It's like unique to him, the way he plays the game, which is so fun. But yeah, I mean, it's good. About whether he might come back early, I think it's possible he could come back before May 6th if he's playing really well, if he looks great. Maybe they do something with him around the time where rosters get trimmed on May 2nd. That's why I was kind of curious. I guess just because of the way the schedule aligns is why they said the 6th. But I could see him coming back on the 2nd if maybe it makes some roster adjustments easier or beneficial to the team in one way or another. But beyond that, I would not expect anything. Let him be. Leave him be. Be extremely grateful to the Lord above that he's able to come back on May 6th after having had surgery in late July last year.
And so May 6th also lines up with a homestand that the Braves would then start. I think that's important too. People may say, well, it doesn't matter. Get him back as soon as he can. I think there is something important to making his first game back be at home in front of the fans. There was a little mishap, I will say, on opening day where I think he should have been at the stadium to get his recognition for what he did for that World Series team last year, even though he wasn't on the field. You know, he was obviously injured.
It was a total mistake. He was at the stadium that day. He was just told he could go home, so that's what he did. He didn't even realize that they were going to be doing that thing.
Yeah, and you have to imagine, like, the staffer that told him that, you know, probably not in really the position to give those orders.
Yeah, wasn't thinking about pregame ceremonies. Yeah, yeah, there was probably, I think it was probably a trainer that was like, all right, you're done, you're good to go, you know, and so.
But it's also one of those, so like, he hasn't been able to be at home at Truist Park to get the love and recognition that he deserves. Yeah. And so I would just, it makes sense that you want to wait until you get a homestand before, you know, having that moment for him, which is why you're going to, you know, wait until all the way until that Friday.
Caleb, I'm really curious because this is only the tip of the iceberg in terms of, oh, well, he should be coming back now. You know, think about, like, let's say in a week, let's say the Braves have kind of a down week.
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't. But let's say maybe they win some games, but like Rosario is still not hitting, or they, you know, there's some catastrophes defensively out there. And Acuna has hit like two homers in his last two games and is like just looking amazing. Like, I feel like this is only the beginning of what is going to just like continue to snowball this in terms of just the dialogue in the Twitter sphere around the team, you know, wanting him back. So brace yourself for those urges. And I have the urges as well. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not here to like scold anybody for like feeling like they want Ronald Acuna in the team. Like, I do too. Yeah. And it's going to be hard to wait these 3 weeks, but at least we get to watch him play baseball somewhere.
Absolutely. I think the exciting thing now is that, you know, we have a homestand coming up with some very winnable games. Specifically the Marlins and the Cubs coming up. It feels like this is a good time to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, start winning series. Go on that. What the Braves almost consistently always do is they go on a run of just like winning series after series after series. So this is a great opportunity for that.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to get to, Joe, before we get out of here?
We can get out of here.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to Batter Up. For my co-host, Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a good one.